Well, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. Sorry, I missed the last time. I think I was my intention at the last meeting a couple of weeks ago here, this show, I was going to talk a little bit about the Cambridge Charter, and then I got into the thick of it, into the weeds, and I said, "My God, this is a much bigger project." And then I said, "Let's just punt and do that here." So, anyway, there's a couple of things certainly related to the charter I would like to talk about, but let me get to that in a bit. So, first thing I would mention here is that, I live at 366 Broadway, and as many of you may know, there was a fire next door at 368 Broadway this past Thursday, which was pretty dramatic. It was actually three alarm fire. Actually, there in total there were actually units from four cities. There was certainly a wealth of firefighters from Cambridge, but there was some assistance from Somerville and Brookline and Newton. So, and when you sort of look at the extent of the fire, you might think, oh, well, they really did contain that fire, but it really had the potential of turning into a real bad situation, largely because of the proximity to near neighboring buildings, including mine. And so they were intent on getting ahead of it. They had like four different ladder trucks up on the building. Actually, I'll just show a couple of little pictures here just to speak to it a little bit here. So for those who are seeing this picture here, I'll show you some bigger pictures in a second. So this is 368 Broadway. You can see the firefighters up on the roof. Rock and Roll Daycare is actually occupies the ground space, both on this end of the building, as well as the other end of the building. So they really have the entire first floor now. You're seeing most of the pictures here are actually a little bit further into the fire when they were had already gotten a lot of water on it. So you mainly are seeing the white smoke. There's a little bit of brown smoke mixed in there, but early on it was all brown smoke, so it was active fire. My house is this little triple decker here right next door. The joke I was making is I was saved by the Madonna in front of the house, that was somehow fending off the flames, But so anyway, this was a picture. I think I just nicked this from WCVB News. But the City of Cambridge put out a press release on the fire, and you can kind of see how many trucks, how many ladders are up. I think you can see one or two ladders on this side and two more over on this one here. A lot of smoke coming in there. And the biggest drag of it all was the fact is that the wind for the mo you don't see it so much at this photo here, but the wind was mainly blowing toward my house. So for much of the fire, all the smoke that was coming up from the side of the building, from the top of the building, was actually just washing right over my house. I guess you can see a little bit of hint of that right here. So this is my house right here, and the smoke is really coming into it. By the way, the sort the I'm pretty certain where the fire started was right over the first floor, probably electrical in origin. But then once the fire starts, the smoke runs right up those hollow walls and then was coming up in the roof. And I'm thinking some of the fire was also racing up inside the hollow walls. Sort of a problem with some of these old buildings. I have insulation in my walls now, would actually probably do double duty to slow down the ascent of any smoke or fire. At least I think it would. But they had Broadway shut down. You can see all the ladder trucks here. This is Broadway. You don't see it looking like this too often. And again, here's just one more shot just to give you a little sense of it all. It was largely on the 368 side of the building, not so much on the 370 side of the building. Here's my little mansion over here, and you can see just how close we really are. I think that's probably sort of worth mentioning here in some detail. In the context of one of the big issues that's sort of flying around Cambridge right now, which has to do with what's rather foolishly being referred to as the multifamily housing zoning petition, which is really, the allowance of multifamily housing is at this point is non-controversial. Yet they insist on referring to it that what, the real crux of the petition is about the dramatic increase in the heights and densities of buildings and the diminution of side setbacks and rear setbacks. They've improved it a little bit from the original proposal, which was just going to give you as of right, anywhere in any residential zone of the city, the right to build like a six-story building. And including parts of town where the norm is like 2.5 stories. And then if you've got larger lots, especially the notion able to be that somebody's basically going to realize they can make a fortune if they even if a land cost is a lot, they could still make a fortune perhaps by building a very super tall building. And so you'll start seeing potentially, I don't know if it would really happen because of the economics, but even on like Washington Avenue or Avon Hill Street or Bellevue Avenue, that where there's a certain norm to this housing stock, you might actually see something just completely anomalous popping up. I mean, there have been some proposals to sort of just say, well, let's just allow it just on the corridors. But, for people, those of us who live on places like Broadway, we've seen like, what, you're going to just basically just put it all right on Broadway and let's just wipe us all out, So, we're not particularly happy about that. But anyway, let me just, the reason why I was sort of mentioning it right now is that, when sometimes it takes something like a fire to sort of drive home certain points that maybe you didn't worry about or think about as much, were it not for that. So when they were passing the current petition as amended, which would allow 4 stories as of right and 6 stories if you're willing to make 2 inclusionary units. So I'm a little puzzled. Actually, 1 inclusionary unit, you get one inclusionary and one more market, so you could build a 6-story building then. With certain provisions, I think they allowed a little teeny little bit more setbacks from the property lines, which means nothing in a place where I am in a mixed business residential where commercial properties can build right up to the line, anyway, why am I mentioning it here right now is that, well, when you have a fire that's just 10 feet away from your house and the wind is blowing toward your house and you're assisting firefighters and telling them how you can jump this fence or get access to the backyards or whatever. And actually even pointing out, like, I think that's where the fire is. And then they're turning hoses on it. When you're sort of actively involved in it, you start to develop a greater respect for why certain fire codes were developed after, the great fires of the 19th century in Boston, Chicago, and elsewhere. And, and why, over and above just pure fire codes, how it's I think, a pretty good idea that in the case of any sort of catastrophic situation, firefighters, or never mind just firefighters, even utility workers who have to do things like re replace, I have a utility pole in my backyard. Okay. If we ever have to replace a utility pole, how are they going to do that? Right. How do you even get access? I mean, I think there's a way of doing that, coming off through other people's properties, and I hope there is at least some legal requirement that they must allow it, But it seems to me like you would want to have like every face of every building. There ought to be a way to get in there and get there in a good way, And as the firefighters were setting up ladders in front of my house in order to access the building next door. You're realizing, well, it's a good thing I didn't have a structure there. In fact, I have a teeny little front yard with a Madonna statue there, and that's where they were using as a staging area to set up a ladder so they can access a fire. So good thing I had a little setback there, don't you think, there, counselors? And it's kind of interesting and maybe a little bit ironic that at the January 27th City Council meeting when they were passing this bigger Cambridge petition to a second reading. So there were at least two people came up during public comment. I think one woman said one of her ch children is, or maybe both, I don't know, are training to be firefighters, and they were, and she had really real concerns about putting in buildings of a certain scale with minimal setbacks on relatively narrow streets. Broadway is a little bit wider. So that's less of an issue here. But if you have a narrow street and what are you going to do if you have to get fire apparatus in there? I don't really think the members of the Cambridge City Council even think about this. They basically get their marching orders from this A Better Cambridge group. They work in cahoots with some of the people in the community development department. They just say, build it denser, taller, thicker, and closer. without any concerns whatsoever about these things. I've even heard that now there's even some proposal because of supposed better building methods and fire safety that requirements for having on buildings over a certain height or a certain scale, requiring two elevators, not just two, fire stairwells, but elevators. And they say, well, we just that don't you know that makes construction costs more expensive. So maybe we ought to get rid of that requirement so you only have one working elevator, except when that working elevator is not working, in which case you have zero working elevators, right? So I just have some real misgivings about the way the great planners and legislators are proceeding without actually thinking about what happens in somewhat catastrophic situations. It wasn't all that long ago. It was December of 2016 that we had that big, very big catastrophic fire on Berkshire, in and around Berkshire Street and some of the surrounding streets down in East Cambridge. And it's sort of like, what is that? Because that was what, 8 years ago. So we're not going to be concerned about having buildings built too close to each other. Don't you know? As long as there's enough room so you can shimmy between the buildings to get to the backyard or drag a garbage can out, that somehow that's adequate. It's not adequate. It really isn't adequate. So anyway, I feel a certain level of frustration because sort of like it doesn't matter what you say because you got elected officials who are really only they're only listening to a small group of influential people. And capitalizing on a perception of a crisis. Not that I'm trying to diminish the notion that housing affordability is a problem. It's a big problem. But the thing is, you don't do planning, good planning, just based in crisis mentality, and where anything goes, and the more the better, without any discussion of anything else. So anyway, so that was my adventure this past week. And what made it a particularly interesting adventure also was that it was also the first day of classes that evening. I teach my linear algebra course at Harvard Extension School. So there I was, happily sitting right where I'm sitting now, preparing. And then I say, what's those sirens going on here? And then everything gets disrupted. I had to sort of confess to my class. I said, well, I would have had more here for you, but the building next to me went on fire. So anyway, I hope this doesn't happen to you. So, this is not it's not a good thing, and it can be very destabilizing in ways, subtle ways that you may not even be aware of. It's like it's sort of the nature of trauma, I think it's fair to say. Right. So let's pivot a little bit here away from my own personal travails. By the way, actually, let me say one other thing about Broadway, just in case I don't forget. Right now, I think actually, no, not right now, it ended supposedly 13 minutes ago. There was the second of three so-called community meetings about the Broadway bike lane, or they're spinning it as the, what are they spinning it as? The Broadway Safety Improvement Project. So they had a meeting last Tuesday in Zoom. I hate meeting like this in Zoom because you don't even know how many people are in the Zoom. You don't even know who they are. And it's sort of like the people who are running the meeting have such total absolute control over every aspect of things. It's sort of like it's a very much a like a one-way meeting, in spite of the fact that there are questions being posed because they're sorting through and deciding which questions deserve answers and which ones do not. But they also had another meeting tonight or today from 4 to 6 at the Fletcher Maynard Academy. So I'm sure there are some people down that part of Broadway who are going to raise some issues. And I think we have another meeting coming up now on Thursday before my class from 6 to 8 at City Hall Annex. And I can tell you that a lot of people I know on Broadway are really up in arms, and what they really want is just to remove Broadway from the cycling safety ordinance. And I'll tell you, if you would ask firefighters in this city what they really ideally would want, Broadway, much as I dislike it at times when I hear the sirens on Broadway, Broadway is the one of the few streets now where you can actually move relatively quickly if you must with fire apparatus. So, to this day, it's still sort of it seems to be the preferred route for fire engines and ambulances and police cars when they really have to get someplace fast. When they start putting in zigzags and chicanes and white posts everywhere, I guarantee you this is not going to be an ideal street for moving apparatus. You know, people say, "Oh yeah, but you'll slow down traffic, and don't you know that's safe?" Yeah. Let me tell you about safety. Safety was getting fire engines here really quick, you know, and I'm a little more worried about that brand of safety, especially with the knowledge that three bicycling fatalities last year, all three, 100% of them occurred on places that have separated bicycle facilities, 100% of them. You know, the advocates don't like to acknowledge that. The truth is, if you build separated facilities and you do them poorly, the problem's always going to be at intersections, whether separated or not. So sure enough, you know, one person over by the BU Bridge where there was a dicey little piece on the Paul Dudley White bike path. And then, you know, on Mount Auburn Street, and then the other one down the foot of Hampshire Street where they have these, you know, hot off the press, brand spanking new separated bike lanes, you know, and those are the three places where the people died. So if they're telling you that it's the separation that's so important for bicycle safety, they're not telling you the truth. You know, that is good for comfort for people 8 to 80. Believe me, I know all the phrases that the people out of traffic and parking like to throw. But the thing is that in terms of safety, sure, you'll do get the anomalous Doering incident that can happen mid-block, but it has always been about intersections. And visibility is more important than separation. And when you're less visible and a vehicle is turning, that invisibility or decreased visibility is the single most dangerous thing when you're on a bicycle. And believe me, I spent decades with bicycle as my primary mode of transportation around Cambridge. All right, so let me go switch a little bit here. Okay, and I'm going to just move a little bit over here through. I'll sort of go back and forth here. So we had a meeting of the Cambridge City Council last night. You know, I was sort of coming up with some sort of, you know, fun little way of talking about it. And I was, since it was something on the agenda having to do with celebrating the 250th anniversary of Independence Day and the, you know, and the events of the revolution that are coming up. And I think it's what a $65,000 allocation to support that. I said, well, you know, with all this other business here about Cambridge as a historic city getting basically bulldozed and built over for the sake of addressing, you know, the capitalization of a crisis, I thought, what the heck? So I put a little model of City Hall on top of Lucius Page's History of Cambridge book, took a picture, and that was my picture. Yeah, just for fun. But anyway, one of the things that was on the agenda that I didn't think it was anything. Was there with three items on the city manager's agenda having to do with the surveillance technology impact reports, specifically about the first one had to do with police department wanted license plate recognition, you know, technologies, you know, use of fixed cameras that could read a license plate and determine, you know, translate into text and determine license plate numbers. Mechanisms for accessing cell phones in the case of emergencies. And another one was had to do with the use of drones or remotely piloted aerial vehicles, right? Now, as I say, I didn't think of this as silly me. I just thought, okay, you know, police department, they need other tools, like you need some cameras to help gather evidence so you can prosecute people. And I will say that at least two councillors, Councillor Simmons and Councillor Wilson, very pointedly reminded everybody that we could have used some of these technologies in the deaths of three people who some of us knew, you know, Charlene Moore, which was some years ago, and two others, you know. So, you know, the police department, our police department actually just wants to be able to solve crimes and prosecute people, even in those cases where people are unwilling to come forward because out of fear of retaliation. So I'm all for these things. I think it's great. And I think Denise Simmons pointed out, you can't go into a store or much of anywhere else in the city without having cameras operating. And already right now, the police department routinely, so if there's an incident, they go combing the neighborhood saying, who's got a Ring camera? Who's got a doorbell camera? You know, can you give us access to it? And I think they even have some of it mapped out so they can call those people like immediately if we need be. So basically, because the police department doesn't have some of these technologies, but people do, you know, then they're basically working with the citizenry in order to gain access to important real-time information about if a crime has just happened, so they can actually make a case and or solve it or prevent few more violence, right? So I just view these things as non-controversial, but sure enough, the usual suspects, you know, the MIT graduates, well, there's a sort of a contingent of people, the ones who were arrested, you know, protesting, you know, the situation in Middle East this past year, who they all uniformly hate police everywhere. And they've got friends on the city council now, you know, and they certainly have had friends among city council candidates. I'll tell you that much in 2023, people who were calling cops murderers and, and really speaking obscenely about Cambridge police, you know, and some of these candidates actually did quite well in the polls, but thankfully were not elected. But anyway, they call up the troops, and then sure enough, there's a bunch of people, half maybe half who lived in Cambridge. But you know, graduate students and other people who are part of, you know, the union down at MIT, those that was the bulk of them all. And they go up there and they kind of present themselves as if they are the community. And then some of the more foolish city councilors treat them as if somehow the people have spoken, which is nonsense. So anyway, in the end, this little item that I didn't even think of was particularly consequential. The city council said, okay, fine, for the cell phone, you know, mechanisms for getting access to some of the data in the cell phone, for license plate recognition. I think part of that is because they want to do that for traffic enforcement, so because they don't want police interacting with people in traffic stops. And then they passed to the Public Safety Committee the question of drones. I don't know why. I mean, it was a lot of nonsensical stuff about, oh, they're gonna be getting drone footage, and they're gonna be, you know, the biggest concern, everybody in part of their rhetoric was about, you know, the Homeland Security people and the immigration officials are going to be basically strong-arming Cambridge to turn over data to go and use this all for, you know, for enforcement on immigration violations and things like that. There is like zero indication of that having any validity, and I think there's good reason to have 100% trust in our local police officials to only do cooperation in the case when there really are criminal, you know, real criminality involved, you know. But you know, you can't convince some people, you know. It's you know, you're guilty till proven innocent if you happen to be wearing a blue uniform in the eyes of some people. You know, and that's, I don't know what you do about that. So anyways, that was sort of a big item that, you know, that I didn't even think it was going to be anything, but it turned out to be something. Some other smaller things. There was a report from the city manager's office and from Public Works and elsewhere, having to do with some concerns about the excavation that'll happen up around the Alewife area for building an access tunnel for so that you can get vehicles in and out of the red line, so you don't have to have as disruptive the closures as we've had in the past. So you can basically just bring vehicles in to do track work and such, you know, when you just drive them in. Yeah, you don't have to like go down to, you know, South Boston or something to do it. So people, I think city councilors and others and the citizenry up there had very valid concerns about making sure that, you know, there's no unnecessary or improper disruption of contaminated soils. And I would, from my own, you know, impression of from the report, is it looks like there's adequate safeguards. But I'm sure there are people who are going to disagree with me on that. But it seems anyway, it was a good report to get that back. I did mention earlier that there was a non-controversial appropriation so that we should be expecting this spring and later, hopefully, I guess April 1775 was when, I think the incident at the Old North Bridge, right? The rude bridge that arched the flood. So Cambridge, swearing in George Washington at the Washington Elm, actually right there's a little piece of the Washington Elm, a little box made out of the Washington Elm behind me. So there's going to be some events, and I'm going to go to them because I love history. I love local history, and I think Cambridge is a wonderful historic city to live in because you're really there, so I think that's just going to be great. I did mention about the Broadway Safety Improvement Project Working Group. They made the appointments to this committee. I decided in the end not to apply because I think I'll be more, if it's even possible to be effective in talking to a wall. And the city sometimes, at least when it comes to cycling safety ordinance, is like a wall. That it's in some respects, it's you can be more effective outside the committee than on the committee. So I chose not to even apply. But they did appoint, I think it was like 15 people, something like that, to be on this committee. One little gripe I have here, in a way, this is going to sound petty, but I'm going to say it anyway. I live on Broadway. We have Broadway Somerville. You have Broadway in New York. There is no place called Broadway Street. And when a city report comes back appointing members to the Broadway Street Safety Improvement Project, it makes me wonder whether the people in the traffic department, or even maybe even the city manager's office, have any roots in Cambridge whatsoever. I mean, come on. Maybe, come here. I'm at 366 Broadway. I'll take you for a walk around town. I'll introduce you. I'll point the street sign that says Broadway, period. Okay. Am I being petty? Maybe a little bit, but come on, give me a break, right? I also happen to point out there was a meeting also last week of the Traffic Transportation Committee of the City Council, chaired by Kathy Zusi and also Sabrina Wheeler, but Kathy was running a meeting, having to do with projects that are happening around town. It was things that are interjurisdictional projects, we were talking about some of the Memorial Drive projects where they're going to be changing, doing lane reconfigurations from JFK Street up to Gary's Landing. He says emphatically, because it's named for Elbridge Gerry, who was vice president of the United States. The gerrymander was also named for Elbridge Gerry G. So if you're working for the city, especially in transportation, please do not call Gerry's Landing Jerry's Landing, because it makes it seem like you just flew in or fell off a cart from somewhere else elsewhere. Okay. So please let me educate you. So anyway, enough for my pettiness. All right. So anyway, the matter of the just just sort of summing up from last night's meeting, the matter of the so-called multifamily housing, that's actually was passed to a second reading last week. Certainly, it got to be publicized, whatever. So it'll be up for a vote next week, and I can guarantee it's going to have the adequate number of votes, which I think is a mistake. I think I kind of highlighted the meetings last week by putting in a picture of Robert Moses, just to sort of indicate the fact that we have gone through periods where people said progress marches on no matter what, and if we have to bulldoze you over, how dare you stand in the way of progress? And I'm a little bit more of the Jane Jacobs school of urban planning myself. Thank you very much. More of a evolutionist than a revolutionist. So anyway, that's just me. So I'm going to take my little artificial pause here and then return momentarily.